Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. I know that many of you know that on Mondays, 5:30 Eastern Daylight Time, Reginald Clemens, a wrongfully convicted incarcerated individual, has been doing his show, and I've been helping him since he hasn't been able to find someone to run this show for him on Mondays. He will be calling in, hopefully, and he is going to be talking about reentry 2030. In the meantime, we are also expecting to come on the show with us Gerald Bowling, who is going to be announcing.
This is a free call from
a block. A block party sometime in October. So he should be coming in as well. We are going to be having Reginald Clemens come on in a few minutes now. Okay, we now have Reginald Clemens on the show with us. So I am going to turn this over to him to introduce himself to everyone, and he can take it from there. Reginald, we have started your show for you, and it's on you now. Is there anything you wanted to say prior to?
Yes, I'd like to thank everybody for taking out the time to listen to the show. I thank you, Leona, for the opportunity to spread the word about reentry. My name is Reginald Clemens. I am a former death row inmate, and a lot of people may know about my case from between the 1990s and 2000, all the way up to 2017. Where there was a lot of people that fought long and hard with me in a case where I did not kill anybody. I actually tried to prevent the murders and stop the murders from taking place, but they attempted to execute me as a co-defendant in the case. And I thank God that the case got reversed on police brutality. And so that was the grounds upon which the case got reversed. And there was a lot of corruption and stuff in the case, and there's a lot of illegal things that took place and continue to take place, and even today they're still denied me 24 years time credit. But I don't let that prevent me from moving forward. I don't let that prevent me from continuing to try and help bring down crime, help find redemption for myself, and to try and overcome the faults and the mistakes of my past to be a better man, a better human being. Because I said I made some bad choices, and I put myself in a position where I was involved with it too close.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Where I was, I put myself in a bad situation and made some bad decisions. But now I'm involved with the reentry program, which is to help prepare prisoners for release back into society. We spoke last week about the reentry program. It's called Reentry 2030, and it has the support backing of the governor and the director of the Missouri Department of Corrections. And we're working real hard to facilitate these classes with based upon rehabilitation programs that we've taken ourselves. It's peer-to-peer. It's a peer-to-peer situation where we are facilitating the classes and based upon classes that we've taken and experiences that we've gone through in prison and based upon the experiences of our past. And teaching short-term prisoners who may be doing 5 or 7 years about, first of all, the blessing of having the opportunity to go back into society, how much of a blessing that is, how much of a blessing it is not to make a permanent damaging mistake to your own life. And also, I have with me Jerry Husky, who was on the show last week also, and I would like him to introduce himself, if that's not too much trouble. Jerry? Is Jerry Husky on the switchboard?
I don't see him.
Okay. Could you hold on for just 1 second, please?
Sure. Reginald is going to bring on another guest with him, and his guest was on last week, and I'm sure that you'll all remember him when he comes on with us. Again, they are speaking about Reentry 2030, and this is something that Reginald Clemens has been working on, and he has been trying to bring awareness of this program. So here we go again. Are you back with us, Reginald?
Yes, I'm back with you. And last week we went over a lot of different aspects of the 2030 initiative and what is there to address when it comes to reintroducing people back to their families, and how some of the rehabilitation efforts over the past have failed, and what are some of the failures in the prison system. Well, this week I'd like to go over in greater detail and touch on. Also, I want to ask you about the federal program that you had touched on last week, too, because I want to flesh some things out.
Okay.
Because you were talking.
Okay. I sent, and you should receive it in a few days. I sent everything to you around those issues, but I will, real quickly, I will read it. This is something that the Department of Justice had sent around, and thought maybe I had read it last week, maybe not. It came in from Criminon International. Okay, this is what the Department of Justice said. Two similar states with dramatically different. Okay, hold on a second. Criminal Justice and Rehabilitation in South Dakota. Hold on a second. I've been getting more emails from, oh, here it is. Criminal justice reform is needed. Department of Justice announces new steps in improving criminal justice practices. The United States Department of Justice recently announced several criminal justice reforms, particularly regarding policing, how prisoners are treated, discrimination, and sentencing disparities. The reforms reflect the broader consensus among Americans that some criminal justice practices and policing methods must be reformed more fairly without reducing public safety. And it goes on to say there are six areas that they are going to be working on. And I believe Jerry just came on. Department of Justice, okay, it said, without reducing public safety. Six ways the DOJ is working towards criminal justice reform. Citing information from the Office of Public Affairs at the Department of Justice, the Justice Department is working towards more effective and compassionate criminal justice by raising the standards of federal law enforcement agencies. The DOJ put out new guidelines for all federal law enforcement agencies, including new guidelines on using force, chokeholds, and carotone restraints, no-knock entries, and proper body-worn cameras. Number two, promoting new practices in law enforcement response to behavioral or mental health crisis. The DOJ is awarding discretionary grants to promote the adoption of new guidance on best practices for law enforcement officers responding to calls regarding individuals with disabilities or individuals suffering behavioral or mental health crisis. The third is laying out criteria for improving conditions of confinement for prisoners. The DOJ released new criteria for how incarcerated individuals should be housed, particularly regarding restrictive housing and efforts to reduce the need for and use of restricted housing. Number four is creating new data collection systems to inform the public better. The DOJ implemented new systems for better management, manage and present to the public the following data reporting programs: the FBI's National Use of Force Data Collection Program, the Law Enforcement Officers Killed and Assaulted LEOKA Data Collection Program, the Death in Custody Report Act Program, and the National Incident-Based Reporting Systems. Number 5, outlining new guidelines on preventing racial profiling within law enforcement offices. The DOJ updated its guidance on race, ethnicity, national origin, religion, sexual orientation, and gender identity in law enforcement activities. The new guidelines seek to prohibit racial profiling by federal law enforcement agencies by setting forth limited circumstances when federal law enforcement agents or officers may consider a protected characteristic. Number 6, supporting action to reduce criminal justice system interaction safely. The DOJ released a strategic plan detailing how the DOJ and all other federal law enforcement agencies can reduce criminal justice system interactions, support rehabilitation during incarceration, and facilitate reentry for people with criminal records. Attorney General Merrick B. Garland commented on the new commitments, indicating these were enacted to continue improving law enforcement interactions within their communities and criminal justice systems more broadly. While our work is not done, we are proud of the important changes we have made over the past year to update our internal policies and better provide our state and local partners with the resources and support they need to keep communities safe from violent crimes, advance transparency, and build community trust. Garland, indicating the fact that improving how the United States addresses criminal and justice is an ongoing, always evolving effort.
And may be monitored and recorded.
Why criminal justice reform is needed. The United States incarcerates some 2.2 million people between its state and federal prisons and jails, more than any other country in the world, quadruple the 500,000 people it incarcerated 30 years ago. The United States spends about $182 billion on incarceration each year, alleging that punishment for crime via incarceration is a sufficient deterrent to crime. However, while crime rate fell between the 1990s and early 2000s, they have more or less plateaued over the last 20 years with occasional spikes and dips. There are other ways to improve results for offenders and simultaneously deter criminal activity, and criminal justice reform efforts to date have typically sought to achieve these objectives by providing meaningful sentencing reform, reducing repeat offenders, curbing recidivism, and supporting law enforcement. More broadly, criminal justice reform efforts typically revolve around important topics like sentencing reform, alternatives to incarceration, clemency, abolishing the death penalty, reducing racial profiling, abolishing solitary confinement, improving policing, and supporting formerly incarcerated individuals through reentry. One area that does not receive enough focus is educating inmates and supporting them through real reform efforts while they are in prison so they might have better lives post-incarceration. Inmates need support and programs that improve their self-respect, communication abilities, and personal relationship skills. They must be taught how to avoid criminal behavior and break destructive habits. They need to be given tools to address life's challenges without resorting to crime activity as a solution to their problems. The U.S. criminal justice and incarceration systems must provide those individuals who became entwined within those systems with the life skills they need to become productive, responsible members of their communities. The Department of Justice is progressing toward a more fair, equitable, and effective criminal justice system. However, much work must be done to create a system that truly reforms offenders while reducing crime. And their sources came from the White House, the Executive Order on Advancing Effective, Accountable Policing and Criminal Justice Practices to Enhance Public Trust and Public Safety. That was from the White House. So, and the DOJ itself announces 10 additional steps on the one-year anniversary of Executive Order 14074 on advancing effective, accountable policing and criminal justice practices to enhance public trust and public safety, United States Department of Justice. And then it has the total correctional population. And so this is, you had mentioned you're working on Reentry 2030.
Yes, I thank you very much for reading it.
I'm sorry it was so long.
Yes, love that because, like I said, it touched on so much of what is the factual basis of our argument and our dialogue last week when we went back and forth and was talking about a lot of different aspects. Was that Rowena?
Your roommate got them all.
On the radio with us.
What was that, Jerry?
Jerry.
This is Jerry Husky.
I want to introduce him because he's somebody that has been very instrumental in this program, and he's taught a lot of different classes. And one of the things that I'd like to flesh out this week is some of the details about the classes that we teach and what the peer-to-peer communication and instruction looks like.
Okay, I want to make sure this is Jerry. Jerry is 573. Because we are also going to be having Gerald Bowling.
That's me, Leona. That is
okay.
Me.
Okay, Jerry. Thank you so much. Okay, we can hear you. Do you want to, Reginald? Do you want to again introduce Jerry, and then he can let the audience know more about himself?
This is Jerry Husky. He's one of the facilitators in the Reentry 2030 program. And he teaches classes on drug rehabilitation and dealing with criminal. I'll let him explain the different classes that he teaches. I teach some classes also, but I would like him to speak about the classes that he teaches and go into some details and let you all know what it is that he helps people with rehabilitation on.
Okay, Jerry, would you like to let the audience know a little bit about yourself so we can move on and you can speak more about what you and Reginald are working on?
Sure. Thanks, Leona. Thanks again for having me again this week. I appreciate the chance to speak and communicate to the audience what the Reentry 2030 program is, actually the initiative is all about. I was listening a little bit on how you were discussing the DOJ and the mental health crisis within the prison system, which that we're attempting to ourselves as facilitators here in Jefferson City to get licensed so that we can help literally, I mean, with these issues that
facility
are,
and may be monitored and recorded.
These life-threatening issues, I feel. But, I mean, as we know, right, the dynamics of prison have changed, and the public opinion of offenders have changed also. Companies that once would never have given an offender a second look are now giving them, with the help of the reentry program, such as ours, a chance to have a life, a second chance. And part of this is due to the classes, right, that are now being taught by us, the facilitators, to offenders like myself, Reginald, some of the other facilitators here. I personally teach substance abuse and relapse prevention. And my outlook on this, actually, Leona, is the recidivism rate, right? To lower that, we have to actually get to the root cause of the offender's criminality, which I believe addiction is one of the highest leading causes for criminality. About 97% of all criminal cases deal with some sort of substance abuse or addiction, whether it be sex, money, drugs, you know. I mean, this is just – so here I attempt each week to – introduce the clients to the 8 high-risk situations that are going to be a problem for them when they reenter society. But at first, through the substance abuse, you have to look at why are you abusing this? What pain are you trying to cover up? What pleasure are you trying to seek by using drugs? I mean, there are 2 causes, really, that all people, it doesn't matter who they are, use drugs, and that's either to cover the pain up that some type of trauma was inflicted upon them as a young person or through somewhere throughout their life, or they are seeking some sort of sensual pleasure from doing that, whether it be to fit in with the group as teenagers, as most of us. I mean, myself, I'm an addict too. You know, my client directly deals with addiction. But when you can look at what the root cause of that was, then you can begin to address and recover from it. And there are 8 high-risk situations that are a part of this. The biggest one being like negative feelings, right? It's easier to look at anger and guilt and offender's point of view rather than look at the fact that, or say, you know, as a man, I'm depressed today, or I'm sad, you know, I'm worried. We don't want to address those feelings. Therefore, we'll cover that up and we'll say, I'm angry, you know. Another one is as addicts, we like to test our personal control. Oh, I can stop with one hit, one shot, one drink. We all know that goes to the insanity of addiction. That's just not going to happen. Plain and simple, you're not going to stop after that one. I know personally myself, that's going to give me the fuel to just go full bore till the drugs run out. And since I was a hyper-functioning addict, that means that for those listening that don't know what that means, I had a job, a very good job. I was a union painter. So I kept that all hidden, though. My addiction was so well hidden that I drove a company truck. I had a company charge card. And in my mind, I wasn't an addict. It wasn't until after I took the classes here offered at Jefferson City, the ITC program, that I began to address those issues that, hey, you are an addict. Nobody takes their $65,000 company truck down to their dealer's house on a Friday, double parks it in the street, waits to get his drugs, and still believes in his mind that he's not an addict. I was a full-blown addict. I just believed that through working and through the fact that I had a company truck and a company charge card that I wasn't an addict. There couldn't be nothing farther from the truth, but as an addict, you know, we live in a false reality, and addiction plays a huge role in why most of these gentlemen are here. So therefore, I do my best each week to help them see and recognize that, and then to give them coping skills and to keep them in a prolapse, which is seeing the problem and then making plans to avoid that problem in their future. I mean, we constantly want to, somewhere along the line, most of us forgot that, you know what, you can have fun with other people and not have to be high or drunk. You can have a life without having to go out and rob and steal. It isn't until we change that thought process in these men to say, hey, you know what, you are worth it. For whatever reason that you were traumatized as a child, we need to change that thought process and show, you know, I mean, your self-esteem plays a huge role in all of this. But the average person doesn't want to admit we have a self-esteem problem when most people do have that problem. And until you address that, you can't move forward into fixing the other issues involved. But here in reentry, we're addressing all of that. We have self-esteem classes, substance abuse, relapse prevention, and then we're getting them to reenter society by giving them an opportunity to take, like, graphic arts. We have an awesome facilitator here that teaches graphic arts. We have other ones that teach life skills, computers. I mean, these are things that 10 years ago that would have been just as you were saying, that just would have been unheard of in DOC.
You have 1 minute left.
But thank God everybody's outlook is changing on how offenders are looked at throughout the public. And at this point, I'll go ahead and turn it back over to you, Reginald. I'll have to call back in.
Yes, I
Leona.
That's a good point for me to pick up.
The caller has come up.
Thinking about how the form that has been put together, the formula that has been put together has been punishment-based. And that formula has not worked to bring down the crime rate. It has not worked to cut down on the prison population. And it hasn't worked. You know, there's punishment and punishment, compounding punishment on top of punishment. What it's shown to me, what it's proven to me in my experience and what I've witnessed as a prisoner is that it reinforces the abuse that a person has suffered. It reinforces the system of abuse that a person has. Because some people have been sexually abused, they've been physically abused, they've been verbally abused as children. And then you have the neglect aspect. When you throw me in the hole and just leave me in there, that's no different than locking me in a closet, which is considered child abuse. But because we're adults, we're supposed to be able to bear that. Well, that reinforces that child abuse. That reinforces those things that made me a criminal in the first place. So compounding abuse with more abuse is not a cure to criminality and doesn't inspire rehabilitation. And this is what it is that we're doing in reentry differently. In reentry, we're taking and we're helping a person reach into their childhood. We're helping a person to analyze their abuse and the effects and impacts of that abuse that they've suffered in their life. So that as they begin to address those issues, they can begin to connect their present criminal behavior and negative character traits to the negative things in their childhood and in their past. So they can learn how to analyze and identify their own patterns of behavior. So that they can do self-actualization.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
It's self-analyzation. But I'll say,
I'm on my
have like 15 different classes. Yes. And one of the things when it comes to the neglect aspect, right, and it's something as simple as a handshake. There are a lot of young men who grew up in single-parent households where the men weren't there. And that cycle of abuse continues, yes? And that cycle of neglect. And then we're also having necktie classes, right? Because there's not a man in the home to show these young men the basic life skills of being a man and of manhood. There's not a man there to show them how to tie a necktie or how to shake somebody's hand or speak with confidence and carry the confidence of being an adult instead of the false bravado of covering their inadequacies with aggression and violence. Because a man is not aggressive and violent in order to assert himself as a man. A man asserts himself as a man through moral perpitude, fortitude, through hard work, and through demonstrating the willingness to sacrifice. And then we have to go in and help a person analyze these things through these classes that Jerry teaches along with other facilitators. And I believe Jerry's back on the line.
He is.
And I'd like him to continue talking about the classes that he has taught and he continues to teach.
Can I respond to both of you for a minute? I know this is your show. I just wanted to say something real quick. And I've said this on my... I've said this on my own show often. We have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses and addictions. And I just got through the other day, there was one of the girls, one of the advocates in a group mentioned OJ and was judging him. And I said, if we actually look at the Ten Commandments, we can actually say each and every one of us in this whole country has violated one or more of those commandments. But we have an epidemic in this country of addictions and mental illnesses. And as Jerry mentioned earlier, This is sad because people stereotype all prisoners as though they're all criminals. And we have to look at the victims who became offenders. We have to look at the wrongfully convicted, the first-time offenders who were victims before becoming offenders. So when we talk about victims, we're not just talking about victims on the outside. We're talking about traumatized people who became offenders. And because they had been violated, abused, grew up in domestic violence situations, grew up in the streets and the ghettos of Boston, New York, Chicago, all of these places. So we have to look at why people turn to drugs. And as Jerry mentioned earlier, and you mentioned it before, Reginald, people are covering up. They're trying to hide their pain. And we have to be in the people in these communities. Rather than judging, we have to lift their self-esteem. We have to let them know that they are worthy. Because a lot of these people that were victimized as children blame themselves. They feel they should have been able to do something to prevent it from happening. So they're carrying that guilt as well as the pain of the violations they've had to go through. And I just wanted to add that.
Well, I appreciate that, Leona. It's Jerry again.
I just like to say that you can't hold a person down without getting on the ground yourself. And you can't destroy someone's humanity without losing your own. So when we take the route of punishment and abuse as a form of punishment and incarceration, we're not sent to prison for punishment. We're supposed to be sent to prison as punishment. When you take us away from our families and then start destroying those family connections and ties and means of communication, that's counterproductive to our humane growth. And while we're fighting to rehabilitate people, and I want to pass things over to Jerry in just a second. When we're fighting to rehabilitate,
this call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Punish people and cover it up. It makes it almost impossible, but it's not impossible because we have the passion and a love for one another and an understanding of how important it is to maintain someone's humanity and reintroduce them to their humanity for them to find happiness. And that's what I want to do. I want to see people obtain their humanity and happiness before release. Jerry?
Thank you, Reginald. One thing I want to go back to, Leona, is one thing that you said, right, is through addiction, right, the problem, if we don't get to the root cause, that cycle of abuse continues and continues to continue, trickles down to our children, and, I mean, it's just a revolving cycle. So here, through the classes I teach, I do my best so the offenders know, hey, look, you know what? As a child, it is never the child's fault, ever. But too many times, like what you were stating and what I stated previously, this damages our self-esteem. Our self-esteem is such a heavy blow when the person that you are, your caregiver, it's supposed to be when you, the compassion that Reginald was talking about, right? Instead, you know, calling you stupid. Well, you can't really grow up believing that. And here in reentry, we're attempting to do healthy relationships. Classes set up, and I take pride in the two classes that I currently teach, which are the relapse prevention and the substance abuse, because these are all things that I cover in those classes. Because the compassion I show these men, hopefully it will pick up, and they will see that, yes, you are working. No, it wasn't your fault. Quit blaming yourself. Get out of this cycle of criminality that you're in. If you continue in the cycle, this is what your life.
You're coming in and out, Gary.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
You,
Yeah, if I may, because I went through this rehabilitation program called IGC.
Hold on to the bad form about Gary.
Intensive Therapeutic Community is what that stands for, and what Jerry is touching on is something that they have us cut off all our facial hair and all the hair off our head. And that's to return us back to a state of childhood. And that's to, so that we can reach back and look at those childhood traumas. And then we have to like go through the process of like a regimen of discipline that we weren't provided a regimen of discipline that will help pull out those pains and those frustrations and deal with your character flaws that are connected to possible abuse and neglect. And I've seen some people who embraced it, and I've seen some people who they just couldn't withstand looking at themselves. But the compassion was there from other prisoners to try and listen to them and help them reevaluate themselves. And one of the biggest mistakes that we make in the midst of our addiction is we start trying to defend our addiction by playing the victim's role. And when we take that victim stance and we don't take accountability for our actions, we're not able to grow beyond our addiction and gain that human connection. And that's what a lot of prisoners are lacking. A lot of us as prisoners, we feel other than. We feel rejected by society, and we feel like we'll never be included into society. So there's no sense in embracing the rules and laws of society if I don't feel included or embraced, if I always feel other than. And we have to, these classes break that cycle of abuse. And I hope that Jerry's mind is clearing up a little bit, because it is breaking up somewhat. Can Jerry,
hello? Is it back on, or is it still breaking or fading?
No, you sound okay now.
So I wanted to talk a little bit on how Reginald was expressing a lot of offenders. They feel rejected by society. I mean, most of these guys, you have to imagine, have held a job. So they don't know, they don't have the tools to even begin to hold that job. So that's you here now with Reentry 2030 to give them those tools. Show them, yes, you know what? You can change not only your life is going to be, this doesn't have to be a revolving door. And like Reginald stated, the bad part about it is some of the guys, they're stuck. They just don't know how to get out of that rut of playing the victim stance. They don't know how to take accountability or responsibility for the harms that they've caused. Therefore, it's blocking their sense of, and this comes into the mental health part also, Leona, about how they see their crimes. When they play that victim stance, they're going to continue to stay in that cycle of criminality until they can come to terms with, hey, you know what? I did endure this abuse as a child. That cycle has to stop, though. I have to take accountability and responsibility for the harms I caused, and now I have to change that thought process and say, you know what? My life is worth living. I'm not going to make these mistakes again. I'm going to now, through the tools I've gained from reentry, be able to have that second opportunity at life. And there's a new program that we are implementing
through the 2030 initiative that is by the Second Opportunity Group, which is a group out of Chicago. They're going to be coming here and teaching us facilitators first how to do this, but they are going to help guys get places to live, clothing, food, care. These are all things.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Even you, as a person on the outside, Leona, these are things I'm sure you worry about. Am I going to be able to feed myself? Am I going to be able to clothe myself? If I get hurt, how am I going to be able to pay for a doctor? Nobody is looking for a handout. They're just looking for a hand up.
You know, I'd like to.
That we can help you.
Tomorrow,
okay.
And this would be a good example of what you two are talking about. I am going to be interviewing tomorrow. His name is Andy Williams Jr. He is running for the presidency, and he is a hood candidate. This is somebody who's been there, done it. He's for the people, and he's going to be interviewed tomorrow on the show. People can find him on the Campaign for Our Freedom. He's got a website, Envision for America Freedom. This is a brother that has been through what everyone else has been through, and he is running for president. And I admire him because it takes a lot of courage to be able to bring yourself from the bottom. And as Reginald said, in order to help somebody that's on the ground, you have to bend down to do it as well. So these are things that we need to look at. What you and Reginald are doing is trying to help the people behind those prison walls, even though you're going through it yourself. The best counselors, substance abuse counselors, are people who have been there, done it, and have overcome. The best social workers are the people that have been there, done it, and have overcome. And what you and Reggie are doing right now is what's needed. It's something that should have been done by the Department of Corrections, but we all know around the country that these things are not happening the way they should. Unfortunately. So this is why we have to continue to fight the fight. But if at all possible, I'd like to have you two come on tomorrow while Andy Williams is on with us being interviewed. So you can talk about what you're doing and get his feedback as well.
Well, I would be, but what
Andy
time
Williams.
Is this going to be?
And he is running.
What
people
time, Leona?
It's going to be on the same time we are on tonight. It's going to be 5:30 our time, 4:30 your time. And I believe he is from Chicago.
Oh.
Andy Williams Jr. And again, he is for the people. He is for the people. He is for those incarcerated. He is for those who are struggling on the outside economically. He's there for all of, you know, all the people. What we have now for government is, it's sad to say it, but we have people who are like children fighting back and forth between themselves. We don't have anything good to look at. So these are people that are coming forth now that have a lot to offer because they've been there, done it, and overcome. And they're out there to try to make this country stable again. So I'm going to pass it back over to you and Reginald and on your reentry. And take it from there. But if you can tomorrow, try to call in then because it's going to be pretty interesting.
Oh, definitely, for sure. This is Reginald Clemens. I'm a former death row inmate. I've been locked up since 1991. And there was evidence that came forward that proved that I was beaten by police and took a confession. And then also evidence came forward that I had tried to prevent the murders that I was accused of. And I was almost executed as a co-defendant. And I was blessed to get up off of death row in 2015. Unfortunately, they say all that time from 1991 to 2015 doesn't count towards the time that I'm serving, but I don't let that frustrate me or deter me from trying to help other people reclaim their lives and get their lives in order. And a lot of the guys that are involved in this program, this 2030 program as facilitators. They either have a lot more time to do, or they have life without. And it's been one of the things that I'd like to point out, it was mentioned last week, where the juveniles were released from prison. And the recidivism rate amongst those juveniles who had life without, who never thought they were ever going to go home, is very low. And a lot of those juveniles, even though they didn't think they would ever go home again, as they grew up in prison and took accountability for their actions and rehabilitated themselves, they sought to rehabilitate others. And as they rehabilitated themselves and others, they became eligible for parole even though they had no chance at parole when they had life without.
You have 1 minute left.
I want people to think about that. I want people to think about this aspect of what it is I just explained. People seek to be better human beings because they want to be better people, not because they have parole days. Because the juveniles that have been released in the past 10 years or that had life without, they didn't have a chance at getting out of prison when they was rehabilitating themselves. So they didn't rehabilitate themselves for a parole day. They rehabilitated themselves because they wanted.
The caller has hung up.
And I want people to bear in mind that that's what we do a lot. We rehabilitate ourselves to be better people. We try to help each other be better people and to get away from our criminality. A lot more people take accountability for their actions than people realize in prison. Not everybody in prison claims to be innocent. A lot of people in prison take account for their actions. And that's when the healing and the growing begins, the real healing and the growing. And we encourage without forcing people to, because it's bad prison etiquette to try and encourage somebody to plead guilty. It's bad prison etiquette to interfere with somebody's case when they're trying to fight for their freedom. But that's a whole nother issue. Because right now we're focusing more on rehabilitation and what are the efforts that are going forward as we seek to rehabilitate one another and others. We need all the help that we can get in this fight for our humanity to bring down the crime rate for a more civil society. One of the classes that I'm teaching right now is interview and negotiation skills class. And what I've been experiencing in this interview skills and negotiation class is a lot of young men have not been taught how to fill out applications. A lot of young men have not been taught how to properly conduct
this
themselves
call from
during
a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
During interviews, and a lot of these young men, we're taking hold of them and we're trying to compassionately and sincerely help them gain those skills on how to do an interview, how to tie a necktie, how to do a handshake, how to fill out a job application, what's the proper way to write your name as far as putting your last name first, your first name last, and putting a comma in between. Little simple things, those little details, they matter and they count. But having to teach those details also shows how much our souls have been neglected prior to coming to prison and the nurturing that is needed before releasing back into society. And that's something that we try to offer in reentry 2030 as we take people through these drug rehabilitation classes, interpersonal development classes, and these computer classes and trade skills and legal classes. So we don't just stop with rehabilitation. It's not just about the drug classes. It's about etiquette and conduct and respect and following rules as well. So there's different layers, and we'll be peeling through those layers in future shows, God willing. Jerry, did you want to continue with talk about the classes that you teach?
Thank you, Reginald. Again, my name is Jerry Husky. I'm serving currently a 41-year sentence for involuntary manslaughter, hence why I do teach the two classes I do, because, like I explained earlier, I never would admit that I was even an addict because I was such a hyper-functioning addict that you just couldn't see it. At my sentencing, my own mother stood on the stand and said, he has never exhibited any characteristics of an addict. Therefore, I never seen any problem with what he was doing. I maintained a job, maintained a house, maintained children. But the reality of that was, is I was hurting everyone, including myself, that was around me for certain actions that, like you and I discussed, Leona, and as Reginald has touched on, that happened to me at a younger age. But once I was able to come to terms with that, rebuild my self-esteem, rebuild and take accountability for my actions, and say, that was me in the past. It's not going to be my future. That's when I was able to finally begin to give back. Instead of being selfish, I became selfless to where anymore I teach compassion. I teach self-respect. I am a role model within the prison. I do my best every day to be that role model so I can show these guys, you don't have to be that guy anymore. You can just be yourself, and people are going to like you. It's hard when you're in a situation like this, especially at my age. I'm 58 years old. I'm going to give back the time that I have. But, I mean, it's I don't do this because I'm getting some kind of reward. The reward is when I see these guys that now will have a chance, like as Reginald was saying, you know, like I spoke about. Most of them have never even had a job, much less maintain it. Now, with the way the public is viewing offenders and the help that we're allowed to give them, they finally have a chance. Now is the time that we will see recidivism lower if they just put the time and resources into this. And in Missouri, we were given that $30 million grant. We are the only state currently that got that grant. So we're spearheading this. We're going to be the model here at Jefferson City for reentry to really show, hey, these guys can do it. If we just have some resources, we can show them how to live a normal life. Because prior to coming here, although I carried or held a job and all of that, I still wasn't able to live a responsible life. And that's what the reentry program is essentially trying to do, help these guys leave here, lead a responsible life, be a productive member of their community, help others, be compassionate to others, because a little bit of compassion goes a long way. So I'd just like to say again, my name is Jerry Husky. I thank you for listening. And Leona, I appreciate being on the show. Reginald, I appreciate being on the show.
I want to thank both of you. I want to also let the audience know, there was a book written, this was quite a while back, but March 15th of this year marked the 50th anniversary of a 1973 Walpole prison takeover in Massachusetts by incarcerated workers. Now, these men took over, and this is really amazing what you're talking about, because this, when they did, a lot of positive things happened. Now, it was the NPRA, National Prisoner Reform Association is what they named it. This was in one of the worst prisons in Massachusetts, which was recently closed down a couple of years ago, But it said that on March 15, 73, those incarcerated at Walpole took over and began running the prison. The NPRA set up a structure of 20 committees, which were accountable to the whole prisoner population. The committees managed the hospital, the kitchen, mail distribution, educational programs, industrial production, and internal problem solving. A printing apprenticeship program was set up to build skills and ensure a higher wage when getting out. The NPRA arranged for visits with families to take place outside the yard with playground equipment they had fought for. Prisoners also set up an adult prisoner education program. And there's a lot more to this whole thing, and I'll send you what I have here, Reginald, and you can share it with Jerry and others. But it took two men, Bobby DeLello and another man, one black, one white, came together, and their groups came together, and they fought for this. This was when they took over Walpole. Now, Walpole has finally been closed. These people wrote a book, Bobby DeLello and Jamie Bissonette, who was the head of the Criminal Justice Association in Massachusetts, in Cambridge.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
But it goes to show the audience, and it goes to show so many people out in the communities, that given the opportunity, these people incarcerated can do wonders. They can do more with these youth on the outside that are messing up royally. They, if they're out in the communities now, they can be helping these young kids who are so messed up. These young kids who have no role models on the outside. And these people that are inside that have been in for years and that are serving all these sentencing, high sentencing, they are actually doing something now. They're coming together. We have a new family when somebody goes into prison. We're not the same people on the outside. Because when someone goes to prison, they can be doing really well in the communities. But as soon as they stumble, everyone's ready to judge them. So what you're doing, Reginald Clemens, what you're doing, Jerry Huskins, what you two are doing is amazing, and I give you so much credit for making these efforts. And audience, again, when the prisoners ran Walpole, it's selling in bookstores, it's selling in Amazon, and you will find that sometimes prisoners have to be their own rehabilitation outlet, their own rehabilitation tool, because they're not getting it from those who are getting all the funding from your taxpayers' dollars. People are putting together their own resources and their own ways to rehabilitate not only themselves, but others as well. So I will turn this back over to you, Reginald, and you and Jerry can finish up.
Yes, what I'd like to close out with is that in the midst of everything that we're doing, we definitely need community and public support. Even though I'm saying the director and the governor is behind us, we need the community support and recognition of what it is that we're doing. But not for the sake of aggrandizing ourselves and putting our name and lights or anything. No, because we need support from the community, moral support. That's what I'm talking about, moral support and recognition, so that we can continue to do this work. Because there are going to be people who are in opposition to us helping people. I don't understand it, but one thing in my experience in life and observation, there's always people who jump up for no reason at all and just be naysayers, negative Nancys, Debbie Downers. We know there's all types of monikers and nicknames for these types of people, but they exist. So we need the people that believe in rehabilitation, believe in a peaceful, productive, and more humane society, and that believe that it's possible to bring down the crime rate like it is in other countries. We can do this, but it's going to take us doing this together, collectively, inside and outside. So we're going to need that outside support base. We're going to need that outside participation in various communities that these prisoners are going to be returning to, and they're not going to be prisoners when they're released. They're going to be your neighbors. And we're trying to help set it up to where there's a handover and a handoff, and they're not going to reoffend, and they're not going to be a threat to your community or to society. Because my grandmother, my children, my nieces, my nephews, I live in the communities out there. I want my family to be safe just like you want your family to be safe.
You know, I...
And, so please help us and support us and look into reentry 2030.
I had a friend. I have a friend. He used to be in and out of prison all the time. He grew up with his mother and his three sisters, no man in the house. But he was in and out of prison for odd things. But I remember this last time he came out about 7 years ago, he said to me, they always called me Lonnie. When I was growing up, it was Lonnie. He said, Lonnie, he said, I have never, he said, as bad as I was, he said, I never thought I'd see the day that I would be afraid of these people out in the communities today, these young people, because he said they carry knives and guns and everything. What he was saying is so true, because crime is on the rise right now, and it's worse than it ever was, because we have two parties that are supposed to be leading this country that have all of us, adults as well, in so much stress, so much bickering back and forth, so much fighting. And then we have Ukraine, Russia, all these countries. We have so much economic problems in this country. Poverty, this country is going downhill. So we can't expect these young people on the outside to be stable if we ourselves as adults cannot be stable. So when you look at audience, listen carefully. When you look at people that need to come out of prison, it needs to be these people that have been in for years that can come out, and these young people will look up to them because they've been there and they've done it and they overcame. So consider this when you start thinking about the incarceration population in this country of 2.2 or 3 million people.
You have 1 minute left.
We have people who have been serving. We have people who have matured. We have people who have grown up. We have people now that are ready to help one another in prison and help those on the outside. We need to look at getting these people out, because if we don't, these young people on the outside, it's going to escalate. Crime is going to escalate because those on the outside are not familiar with this type of mess, chaos. So, Reggie, you and Jerry, I want to thank you again. And again, I hope you'll come on tomorrow, because this is very important to start coming together and talking about these things. And you two have been in for a long time. You're doing an awesome job trying to help those on the inside. And I'm hoping and praying that you someday soon will be able to come out and work with these young people in the communities, young people that will be able to relate to you, and you'll be able to relate to their problems and help them.
God willing. Thank you, Leona.
Thank you,
producing. Thank you both. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Reginald.
Thank you so much, Leona. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to be on your show, and I all of them.
Just keep doing the awesome. Keep doing the awesome job you're doing, because you know what? We need more people who have been there and done it. You know, as a social worker, I say all the time, they never taught anybody, and they never taught us in college about cultures. They never taught us about anything. When a lot of these young people coming out of college as social workers, they're from prominent backgrounds. They've never been married. They don't have children. They don't know what it's all about. So when they go into these homes, they don't know what they're dealing with. But if you go into a home.
That we are attempting, though, Leona, to help these guys to reintegrate back into society successfully. We are attempting to give them the tools to be valuable members of their communities. And as I said, I appreciate this. We need the community and public support to continue doing what we're doing. Unfortunately, I've got to get off of here right now, but I appreciate everything that you're allowing us to do and appreciate your help very much. Education, as we all know, is the key.
Thank you so much, and it is. It is awareness. People need to be aware. Thank you so much for coming on. Again, I hope you'll be able to come on tomorrow, same time, with Andrew Williams on the phone, on the show. And audience, I want to invite all of you to come back tomorrow, 5:30 Eastern time, and listen to our upcoming guest. 323, you want to state your
name,
please?
Thank you again, Leona.
Thank you. 323.
The caller has hung up.
Okay, we have someone on. Okay, 323, you want to state your name, please?
Leona.
I don't know. Yes. Can you hear me? We have 323 on the phone, but apparently they cannot say anything or they don't want to. But again, audience, I want to thank you all for listening in today. We are going to have tomorrow. We will have Andy Williams Jr., an individual running for the presidency, and he will be running in the campaign. And also on Thursday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, we will have C.J. Catherine Johns, who is the founder of Black and Brown United in Action. We will have Kimberly Biggs on with us from Prison to Purpose, and we will have Mika on with us, who is a former correctional officer, now turned advocate. We will have them on Thursday, again at 6:30 p.m. 323, do you want to state your name, please? I guess they're just listening. Okay, audience, again, we're going to be closing down now, and I thank you all for listening in. Again, tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, we will have Andy Williams Jr. on with us. I thank you all for listening in. And again, think about it. These people in prison who have matured went in when they were very, very young, in their 20s, late teens, and now they're in their 50s and older. Give them a chance. Give them an opportunity. We are the only country in the world that has mass incarceration. We are the only country in the world that has so many serving life, life without parole, and on death row. It doesn't have to be. If other countries are successful and have such low recidivism rates, and Norway being the role model for the world, we should be able to do something positive instead of having all the negativity in this country. The economy crisis, the racism, the hatred, the vengeance, the retaliation, the political division, the country's division. We have to look at all these things. We have to start looking at resolutions to these problems, and it's not going to happen by itself. 406, you want to state your name, please? 406? Okay, they either have a sound problem or they're just listening in. Remember, everyone, the Ten Commandments, they often talk about crime, all these people, everybody judging everyone. Think about the Ten Commandments, and you look at all 10 of them, and you're going to find that you yourself have committed at least one, if not more, of those commandments. You have violated as well. So we have to start looking at people. We have to start looking at their past, what they were about, what they went through. Mariam Jacobs is going to be on with us Wednesday of this week. Mariam Jacobs is a psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. She's also an author of the book Suspended Values in Concentration Camps and Prisons, which compares concentration camps with the prisons in the United States of America. Listen to her. That's going to be at 1 o'clock Eastern Time on Wednesday. Next week, we're going to have on with us Dave Van Veen and Marika. I can't pronounce her last name, but they are both from the Netherlands. Dave was a former prisoner. They are both book writers now. They're both authors, and they have written a book they're going to be talking about next Tuesday. And then we have Franz Dell coming back with us, a former 27-year warden, who is going to be on with us again next Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern Time. So be prepared to listen to some of these things and know that change has to come in the United States of America. Positive change, not judging, not criticizing, not hating, but actually trying to come together in unity to see the positive changes. And I will ask once again, 406, you want to state your name? No. This is why the United States of America is in such disarray, because we have people that know there's problems, serious problems, and yet are too afraid to speak out.
Hello.
Or settle for it.
Hello.
406. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. This is Joe. I've had faulty earbuds, and I wasn't able to get through. You kept calling me, but my earbuds wouldn't allow me to respond.
Oh, Joe, how are you?
I'm fine. I was listening to the entire show from the very beginning because I was looking forward to the show when I saw your description page. So I listened to it. I listened to Reginald. I listened to the other people inside there.
Jerry.
I forgot the name of the...
Jerry Huskin?
Yeah. And can you still hear me? Because I'm putting in...
Oh, yeah. You're coming in loud and clear.
Okay, good. So, yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there tomorrow to listen to this guy running for president. I also wanted to talk to you. I guess I can talk to you now. Have you ever heard of the Human Solutions?
No.
Oh, the Human Solution. Okay. It's a blog talk radio show, which has been helpful in getting the prisoners out of prison. They've made phone calls. They have some sort of resources, and they have a blog talk radio show. I called in, but they didn't pick up. But while I was listening to them, that's their agenda. So I hope that you went to the Hope Collection. I hope you went to the other organization that I referred you to. And I'm also telling you about this one.
Okay, what are the names of them again? I'm going to write them down this time so I can announce them tomorrow.
Okay.
The one you just mentioned just now?
Yeah, the one that has the Blog Talk radio show is called Human Solution.
They are
dedicated to... Yeah, The Human Solution. That's the name of the Blog Talk radio show.
Okay.
They're dedicated to helping people get out of prison. They make phone calls, and from what I understand, they've been successful in getting some prisoners out of prison. I don't know if they're like the Innocence Project, but, I guess it's, what they do, even though if it's on a small scale, is better than nothing. And, again, the Hope Collection. The Hope Collection.
Now, is that the one that I joined you on one time? The Hope Collection.
No.
So this is another one?
The phone call that you had joined in was by a guy who was an infiltrator of the Latin Kings.
Oh, okay. So now that's closed. That closed down, you said?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
I can hear you, Joe.
Hello.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Oh, yeah, I can hear you now. This is a new phone I've only had for about a month or so. I don't know why it's going wacky. In any case, it's called the Hope Collection. No, that's not the same. It's not the talk show that you joined. That guy is a living example of a person who was in the hole in the penitentiary for 2 years, and he's running for Congress. Okay?
Oh.
So I was helping him out because of one particular reason, and I can get into that if you have time. I don't forget the name of the other organization, but the Hope Collection does have volunteers which helps people to stay out of prison. So I hope that you go visit them this time.
So is that on a Blog Talk radio show?
No, it's their own website, thehopecollection.org.
.org, okay. Now, they help people stay out of prison?
Yeah, they have volunteers which help people in prison. And they also have primarily have volunteers to help people who are disabled, who are not prisoners. But you can call them or contact them, go to the site, contact them, find out what they have available. They have volunteers for different situations for the community.
Okay, audience.
And the other organization, huh?
No, I was just letting the audience know, the wholecollection.org and Human Solution, Blog Talk Radio Show.
Right. The Human Solution is a Blog Talk Radio Show. The Hope Collection is a website.
Okay. Great. Okay. And again, Joe, next week is going to be Netherlands week. Tuesday, I'm going to have a couple on that they co-authored. I don't know if they're a couple, but they're both authors of a book. And Dave Van Veen and Marieke, I can't think of her. Her last name is like Gills, but there's a name in between. It's very difficult to pronounce. And then Wednesday is going to be Franz Dahl, and he was a 27-year warden he's very interesting. He's been working with the UN. He's been working with the Ministry of Psychiatry. He's been with a lot of them. And then Thursday will be Marion Jacobs. This will be next Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. This week is going to be, tomorrow is going to be Andy Williams Jr., Hood candidate. Wednesday will be Marion Jacobs from the Netherlands, and Thursday will be the founder of Brown and Black, Black and Brown Unity in Action, and that will be with Catherine John, CJ, Kimberly Biggs, and also Mika. So it's going to be a pretty couple of weeks, busy week for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah,
and I hope
this show is very interesting. Yeah, this show is very interesting. I'd also like to know, can you name that book again about the takeover of that particular prison?
Okay, it's called When the Prisoners Ran Walpole.
Can you spell the name of the prison?
Walpole is W-A-L-P-O-L-E. W-A-L-P-O-L-E.
Yeah, P-O-L-E. Okay.
And that's
Walpole
in Massachusetts.
Okay.
And this was a prisoner's, they went on strike in 1973. Bob DiLello, he was a leader of the takeover. And Bobby DiLello is still, he's still around. He's been free for years. But he spent 40 years in prison. He was actually interviewed on television one time. And much of that time that he was in Walpole, he spent 10 years in solitary confinement. Walpole was categorized as one of the most dangerous prisons in the United States of America. In one 18-month period, 20 prisoners were murdered. And at that time, the warden at the time was Raymond Porelli. But they took over the prison, and Jamie Bissonette, she's married now, her last name is different, but Jamie Bissonette and Bobby Jamie was the head of the, she was in charge of the Criminal Justice Coalition in Cambridge. And I'll tell you, I miss the old-timers because they did a lot to try to help the people that were incarcerated.
How do they take over the prison? How do prisoners take over a prison?
Well, this is, and I can read up what happened here. Let me just, it says that 20 prisoners were murdered at the time. At the time, the particular brutal Raymond Porelli was the warden. Rampant guard on prisoner violence were weighed up. Endemic human rights violations, poor nutrition, and filthy conditions escalated. It was common for guards to give prisoners cold meals, urinate in their tea, and put soap powder in their food. In December of 1972, during Kwanzaa, the administration locked the prison down, denying the prisoners clean clothes, showers, outside time, and visits. The lockdown lasted 2.5 months in blocks 9 and 10. Blocks 9 and 10 were classified as departmental segregation units. This is where men were sent for punishment and torture. Protest leaders were sent there in retaliation for their actions. Guards would flood the cells, put bugs in the food, set fire to the clothes and bedding, put the heat on at full blast, or turn it off altogether, do rectal searches, and use mace and tear gas. General strikes shows prisoner unity. A general work strike began on February 21st. John Boone, a black man, was the corrections commissioner who considered himself a prison abolitionist. Demands were for the resignation of Warden Porelli and for citizen observers to be allowed into the prisons. Both demands were met, and the strike ended March 2nd. The hatred for Porelli ran so deep and wide that the incarcerated people stated that he had united them and made them strong. Citizen observers began to enter the prisons on March 7th. The leadership of Walpole Prisons at this time was embedded in the National Prisoners Reform Association, which believed in prison abolition. The NPRA strove to organize prisoners into collective bargaining units and have more power when going up against the guards' union. They saw themselves as a labor union, recognizing that they were captured and exploited workers. The leaders of the NPRA, Walpole, were a black man, Ralph Ham III, who had been sentenced to life for intent to rape a white woman, and DiLello, a white man. They were supported by Black African Nations Towards Unity. of which Ham was a leader. Ham and DeLello worked with Big Bob Hurd of the Black Panther Party, head of the Walpole Inmate Advisory Council. The fight against racism was recognized as a priority by the leadership of the NPRA. They knew they would not survive if they were not united. The prisoners in the DSU agreed to treat each other as equals. In hindsight, DeLello mused it amazing that this kind of unity could have emerged in these circumstances. You just had to be there to fully appreciate it. When the prisoners ran Walpole in 2008 by Jamie Bissonette, South End Press, page 28, the NPRA recognized themselves as workers who deserve the minimum wage, a union, and health and safety regulations. They filed and fought for official union certification from the National Labor Relations Board. The struggle was covered in the press and the media and provoked discussions among people on the outside as to whether incarcerated people were workers and whether they should receive fair wages for their work. Those incarcerated at Walpole, in fact, performed jobs that were essential to the state, including printing forms for state documents and making building materials, license plates, street signs, sewer covers, furniture, and eyeglasses. They cooked 1,800 meals a day. The guards were livid about the prisoners' demands and that Boone had agreed to them. They hated the arrival of outside civilian observers, some of whom had formerly been incarcerated, examined the guards' job performance and reported violations. When the first observers took their post on March 9th, some 50 guards refused to punch in, and the entire 3 p.m. shift walked off the job, calling for Boone's immediate firing. The guards issued a strike ultimatum on March 14th. The NPRA then demanded the release of those locked up in blocks 9 and 10. On March 15th, 11 prisoners were released from Block 10 and entered the general population. In response, some 200 guards walked out of Walpole, beginning an official guard strike. The corridors were free of guards for the first time. The guards union continued to demand that Boone leave. He responded by suspending 150 of them for 5 days without pay. Cadet trainees, who were young men of color, were given keys to the cell blocks in order to work alongside the incarcerated workers. And it goes on. Prisoners take over on March 15th. That's when they formed their committees, and they did all accountable to the whole prison population. They managed the hospitals, the kitchen, the mail distribution, educational programs, industrial production, and internal problem solving. A printing apprenticeship program was set up to build skills and ensure a higher wage when getting out. The NPRA arranged for visits with families to take place outside the yard with playground equipment they had fought for. Prisoners also set up an adult prisoner education program. A board of elected prisoners became a dispute resolution committee to address any larger problems. The beating, maiming, and murder by guards stopped. From March 15th to March 18th, the NPRA functioned as the elected representatives of the prisoners at Walpole and was responsible for running nearly the entire institution. Civilian observers sided with the prisoners. So it says that a never-ending quest to divide the workers in order to exist, the capitalist class constantly demonized and demeaned the incarcerated workers to workers on the outside through their kept press and media. Therefore, civilian observers were very important to the life of the prison. It goes on and on and on.
That's okay. Okay, you got to go anyway.
Yeah, and so, I don't want to take away the audience interest in the book. It's like I say, the book is in the bookstores, and it's Bobby DeLello can be found, talked to anytime. He lives right here in Massachusetts. And again, he did a lot. So anyway, thank you all for listening in. Joe, thank you for calling in. It's been an exhausting day, but we're trying to get
away. It's been a good show.
Thank you, Joe. I enjoy it when you come on all the time because you also bring a lot to the table when you come on the show. We have to do something about the things that are going on in this country. And right now, I'm not satisfied with either parties as far as this government goes.
Nobody is. not even the Republicans aren't even satisfied with themselves. There are too many rhinos in the Republicans, and there are too many traitors in the Democrats.
You know,
not
what
the
was
parties,
so,
it's the people.
What was so disturbing is they just had this terrible thing happen in Florida, and this is the time for DeSantis and Biden to make friends. You know, they have to come together, both parties, and both parties
are
wrong.
They're not going to do it, Leona.
And that's
they're not going to do it.
You know, Joe, I actually believe there's going to be a war in this world, because right now, with going over to South Korea and bringing Japan into it and going over to not trying to provoke, I call it provoking North Korea, because what it's doing is it's angering people with nuclear weapons, and this is something that shouldn't be happening. But
well, that's the plan of the New World Order. It's not. And the politicians aren't going to stop it. They're paid to do what the New World Order wants them to do. It's very easy for politicians to go along with them, because politicians are naturally crooked people. They love the money from the lobbyists underneath the table. They need the money from the lobbyists in order for them to get reelected. And without the lobbyists, they can't get reelected. And if they pass laws which offend the New World Order, then they get replaced.
That money is not going to help them if we're not. Do you know right now, global warming, this, all of these tornadoes, hurricanes, all of these fires, these tsunamis, everything that's going on, is it's all from the global warming, and it's all been predicted. And I know you probably don't believe in the Bible, but it's already been predicted that these things are going to happen. And look at
they've been happening. Yeah, well, they've been happening over centuries.
Worse
so,
than ever.
And also, the other day, the scientists, something like 600 scientists signed a paper saying there isn't any climate danger. This is all man-made propaganda crap. So, we've got tornadoes, and we had the fire in Hawaii, but the fires in Hawaii, they were man-made.
But Canada, too.
They suspect
Canada.
Austin. Huh?
Canada, Hawaii, it's the fires all over. Canada's had, they were evacuating.
I know, but it's by arsonists. Look, this is the way the powers that be want it done. They want transhumanism. They want, as you already know, they want the death of people on the planet to about 500,000. This is their plan.
Jeez. I don't know. It's really crazy, because right now I remember my mother telling me she grew up in Worcester, and she said that the first tornado, and my mother's long gone. It's been over probably about 100 years now that the tornado hit Worcester, but we have never had any tornadoes in Massachusetts. And look at right now, they've been having tornadoes here in Massachusetts. This week it's going to be up to 91 degrees. We've never had this kind of heat. It's been all out west, but now it's hitting the eastern coast.
Yeah. All right. Look, I'll tell you what. When the show's over, look up HAARP, H-A-A-R-P, okay? It's about weather control by the United States and Russia. H-A-A-R-P, HAARP.
H-H-A-R-P. Not A.
H-A-A-R-P. Right. One H, two A's, R-P.
Oh, two A's. Okay. But they're talking, too, about the, real quickly, the UFOs. There's been over 500 sightings. And this isn't government, because the government's trying to understand it, too. Well, that's been mentioned in Ezekiel in the Bible. They talk about UFOs. So all of these things that are happening, it's there. It's right out in front of us. But anyway, Joe, we are running out of time, and I thank you so much.
Okay.
And I look forward to you coming on the rest of this week to listen to some of these other things that are going to be taking place. In the meantime,
all right, I'm going to look up that book. So you be safe, and I'll talk to you, okay?
Okay,
bye-bye.
Joe, you too. Bye-bye. Audience, we are now going to end this episode. Thank you all for listening in, and please join us as we interview the rest of this week. And next week, we're going to have some interesting guests. So we'll see what happens. Thank you again, and we are now ending this episode.